Hail cheaters and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I can't believe it's less than 30 days. I think I saw this right on the Premier League Twitter. Less than 30 days before the Premier League starts?
Oh, yes. Less than 30 days.
It's the body of the World Cup isn't even cold yet, and we're now talking about the Premier League.
It's like it can't be cold because the World Cup is literally still happening. Like there's no,
it's still alive. It's not
still alive. Yeah, I was saying to you. So this is one of my favorite podcasts of the season. I love the. It's actually a two part podcast. I love these team preview podcasts. You know, today we're going through Arsenal through Huddersfield. I think like 4 days from now, we're going to do the next 10 teams. But I do think, you know, before we get any further, we do have to say, you know, commiserations to all of our UK fans and congratulations to our Croatian fan. You know, it's a big moment for both groups.
Yeah. Hello, Mr. Croatia or Ms. Croatia. We don't know your gender, but we know you're out there somewhere. But yeah, it was I was at work while the England-Croatia game was happening, and it was interesting to watch our Slack and our social media just grind into silence as extra time rolled on. And it was quite somber. I think like now sort of ingesting a lot of the media and the podcast and hearing from some of our listeners, everyone is taking it in stride. And you know, deriving what joy there is to take out of making it to a World Cup semifinal. So I really do admire the way the England fans are really spinning this into a positive for their team going forward. So as a U.S. fan, I would only dream to be in your position.
Absolutely. England fans. It was an easy team to root for, so it takes some of the sting away. I mean, this is not their last chance by any stretch. I mean, just the way that they were – you know, there's a moment near the end where Dele Alli was complaining to the ref, you know, about some call or something. And it was like, dude, it's like the 119th minute, you know, and it's like there's just no way the like 8 32-year-olds on Croatia would have wasted their time with that crap if the situation had been reversed. You know, it's just like they're just not quite a veteran team yet, you know. And so, you know, in 4 years time or 2 years time for, you know, in the Euro 2020, Euros, it could be totally different. So. I think they can keep their heads high. And that Croatia team is pretty easy to like too. You know, as an outsider without a real rooting interest, I mean, I just love, I love how old they all seem. They all seem like they're like 45.
I know. I've been enjoying comparing them to the Motley Crue from the original Predator movie starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, just with Jesse the Body Ventura and Carl Weathers just having their limbs shot off but still trying to kill the Predator. That's well, like what Vito looks like to me and the rest of the Croatian team.
I thought you were just going to compare them to Motley Crue. You know, like the long, sort of scraggly hair.
That too.
Either one works. Yeah.
That too. But what about France? Are we
what's gearing there to say? Ourselves? You know, I mean, they're just like a total juggernaut. I mean, you know, we talked about it in our World Cup preview podcast. I mean, they have a great defense. They have solid midfield. They have an excellent attack. They're just excellent, you know. And so there's not as much drama with them. I mean, they beat Belgium. You know, a fake controversy. Belgium really had some sour grapes after that game. I think they were just disappointed, but I didn't think France played overly defensive. I mean, predictions for the final. Who do you think is going to win?
It'll be I'll predict a 2-0 win for France. I'm going to go with the bookies odds here and say France will come away with the win pretty handily.
Okay, I think France is going to win as well. I will give Croatia a goal, though. I think they will find a way to create at least one goal in that match. So
the wheels are going to have to come off at some point. They've played more minutes than
it's a World Cup final, though. I mean, I think they can pull it together for 90 to 120 more minutes. We do have some news, though, Brandon. We are the Patreon Set and Forget League is finito. It's wrapped. Craig Morrison has won the Patreon Set and Forget League. Congratulations to Craig. Can we get some claps, Brandon? Can we get some?
Yeah.
Woo!
Way to go, Craig. Not only does he get claps as the winner of our Patreon World Cup League, Craig is getting a $100 gift card to worldsoccershop.com. Craig, that will be in your digital email And I what put him over the top was him selecting Belgium in pot one, and Senegal got a few extra points out of Senegal versus, I can't remember. I think that was, they were in the same pot as Serbia and teams of that ilk. So that's what put Craig over the top.
Congratulations, Craig. And he just pledged in June, actually. So he really, he got in with a getting was good. It was really, the return on investment from that is pretty impressive. Just congratulations to Lugutierrez, Ricardo Antunes, William Syme, who finished in a three-way tie for second behind him. Then me, Jesse Halstead, and Rick Hortensius finished just behind them. Sean Mack and Daniel King, Brad Bulo, Jeff Petter, and Roger Kendrick all finished just below in the top slot. So congratulations to everybody, but extra special congratulations for Craig for that Belgian pick that was such a great under-the-radar pick. I wish I would have made that pick myself.
Yeah, definitely. All right, and let's not forget about our McDonald's World Cup Fantasy League. Of course, the World Cup is still going on. We'll just run through our top 10 real quick. And also, a note, don't forget to set your teams for the with the third-place match in mind, right, because the third-place match could very well be a much more high-scoring affair than the final itself. So starting at the bottom of our McDonald's League top 10, we've got Dzeko is God. Is that a Bosnian fan there in ninth place? In front of Dzeko is God, we've got Blaise Matuidi, Squad, Mongoose 888, then Link Gassman in eighth place, seventh place, Tama Bahoy. I love pronouncing that incorrectly. Sixth place, Big Luke 575, Andre 787, also in fifth. Fourth place, Price Change. Third place, it's FPL General Mark McGettigan. In second, Jane Mount. Jane Mount's husband, John Mount, is in second place. And in first place, it's Putin in a shift, Floyd Death, with an overall point score of 371. The Tinkerman, a.k.a. Floyd Death, is 11th in the world. So that's no big shakes right there.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know about all of us. I will certainly be pulling for Floyd F to win it all, win that Kia. He's Tinkerman on Twitter. So if you have any advice for him, go ahead and follow him and pass some information along. Brandon, we're eventually going to get to these actual team previews, aren't we? It feels like we've got a lot of
We've got about what 28 days before the season starts. We'll get to these team previews. We'll get to Don't worry about these team previews.
Before we get there, it's kind of weird because there's really nothing to talk about except that World Cup final. There's no matches really, not even preseason matches yet.
Yeah. So unfortunate for the listeners because that means we just jump right to our sales pitch.
Right. Exactly. So this will only take a couple minutes though. Patreon changes. We have some new tiers that we've announced. I posted about it on a bunch of different platforms earlier this week, but you can just go to patreon.com/alwayscheating to learn more about it. We have our first ever Patreon supporter draft league, and we're going to give away an actual physical trophy if you win that draft league. We're also giving away t-shirts. I thought we might do a live draft pod, actually, where, you know, maybe you and I just pod and then we just make fun of our own picks and everybody else's when we do a live Patreon draft. T-shirts at that pledge level as well. So everyone who pledges at that level and sticks with us throughout the season gets an I Survived the 2018-19 FPL season t-shirt. You can also there's a trash talk option now too. You can pick a topic for a Patreon exclusive podcast. And then everybody who pledges at any level gets access to our Patreon supporter Slack, where you can talk about strategy or the best away kit. I saw that conversation going on today.
Okay. The best home kit, bar none, Wolverhampton Wanderers. Well done. Bravo.
They're doing it right, aren't they?
Better than Fulham. Fulham's home kit that was released yesterday is terrible. I was just going to jump in and say the Slack has been really great during the World Cup. I feel like we have a lot more active chatters on there, and people are already just like knee deep in FPL team strategy on the Slack now.
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of really good strategy in there. I actually think it's useful to listen to these team preview podcasts before you start strategizing too much or at least read more about the teams themselves, because I feel like I'm seeing a lot of posts on Twitter where it's like, team almost set, you know, just need one more 6.5 million midfielder to complete. It's like, how can you, I can't even begin to think about my, I have a team that I put together, but I mean, it's crap, you know, because I feel like I really need to think about all 20 teams before I start to think about, you know, putting my team together. Otherwise it's just, you like, I don't want to be in that mode where I'm just like problem solving, where I'm like, okay, I definitely know I want this guy because I like this player, and who, you know, who can I get to fit in? Like, I want to think about who's, you know, what are the fixtures like at the start of the season? You know, who's coming back late from the World Cup? You know, who might be injured, who might be transferred. So that's the kind of stuff we're going to talk about in this podcast.
Well, to that point, just putting this running order together with the first half of the team previews, we are going to run through what our teams look like at the end of this episode. And I am almost ashamed of what it looks like based on the research that I have done over the last 48 hours. So yeah, so much will change.
Yeah. So let's get into that. Right. Before we do though, just a quick thank you to our new and upgraded patrons. We have a bunch of new Patreon supporters since the last podcast. We have two new, what we're calling our producer level supporters. One is Mike DiPietro. The other one is Stephen Toomey. Both great friends of the pods, both great guys. So thank you to both of you. New pledges, James Querelt, Matt Newbold, Chuck Bailey, Vincent Lachain, LaShawn, perhaps. I don't know how you, Vincent, let us know how to pronounce that. Anton Eliasson. And then we also have some upgraded pledges from Vigard Orr, Guy Yedwab, Nick Wright, and Ricardo Antunes. So thank you to all you guys. We'll be in touch to talk about, you know, the head-to-head league and the draft league and all that stuff in the next week or two.
Yeah, I'm super excited to have some producers actually on this podcast who can finally make this podcast perhaps useful for some people. But yeah, Mike and Steven, you guys are amazing. And welcome to the Always Cheating team.
But seriously, everyone who supports the podcast is amazing. It is really sincerely so much appreciated. And if you'd like to support the podcast or look at the different pledge levels, maybe upgrade to something else, go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. And thank you again.
Josh, what do you think? Should we take a quick break and then we can have a clean slate and jump in with our first team preview, Arsenal?
Yes, let's do it. Same old podcast, always cheating. So, Brandon, we're previewing 10 teams in this podcast. Normally, I go first because I'm an Arsenal supporter. This year, however, because of we were switching on and off, you're actually going first because you get the chance to talk about Fulham later on in the podcast. We've been doing this podcast. Yeah, we've been doing this podcast. This is entering our fourth year doing it. And you have never once been able to talk about Fulham as an FPL team, you know, so it's pretty exciting.
Not on the podcast, at least.
Yeah, exactly. We've talked about Fulham. Actually, Fulham has made its way into quite a few of these podcasts over the years, but always like in some rambling tangent that has nothing to do with FPL.
Sure.
So,
yeah. Remember that exciting one time we had Tim Ream on as an actual co-host?
That was
what an episode that was.
Go back and find it. All right. So Arsenal, let's lead us off here, Brandon.
Okay. So my opening remark for Arsenal, it is a team of competition and question marks. So we have a new manager in Emery, and we have a lot of players who are going to be probably competing for starting spots in this team. And there is some mystery in terms of what formation Emery is going to play. Because he was running a 4-3-3 with PSG, but lots of question marks over does that 4-3-3 translate to Arsenal? Because so many big personalities like Neymar and Cavani and Mbappe that Emery basically had to build a formation around them.
Right.
But real quick before we get into player talk and formation talk, we'll just look quickly at Arsenal's opening fixtures, and it's a doozy. The fantasy plonker asks, for Arsenal assets, do you think it's better to wait until game week 3 and spend transfers to get them in or have them through game week 1 and 2? The reason plonker is asking this question is because it's Man City home and Chelsea away. The opening fixture is not kind. However, I am of the opinion, just get the Arsenal assets in right away, because starting in game week 3, it is smooth sailing. West Ham, Cardiff, Newcastle, Everton, Watford, Fulham, up through game week 8 to see if green. I really do like those fixtures. And who's really to say how Arsenal is going to come out of the gates? They could look really good, get that new manager bump, just sort of a refresh of the squad and the tactics. They could do a job on Man City and Chelsea.
Yeah, I mean, I could see not maybe wanting a defender, for the first couple of fixtures, but you know, Man City at home, first game of the season. You'd think Arsenal would be able to score at least a goal in that match, maybe two, and away to Chelsea. I mean, that's a Chelsea team that probably won't have Conte, maybe won't have Courtois, won't have some of, you know, just will be missing a lot of their star players. Probably won't have Hazard. We'll talk more about Chelsea in a little bit. So there's a good chance of goals in that match for them as well. And then, yeah, from there on, it's, you know, West Ham, Cardiff, Newcastle, Everton, Watford. I mean, it's, you know, it's just a great run of fixtures after game week two.
Yeah. So the attack is an interesting question, because if the no lone striker formation sort of persists, if it is a 4-3-3, then you could see Aubameyang and Lacazette both getting starting roles for this Arsenal squad. And I guess then the question comes down to how do Ozil and Mkhitaryan fit into that attack? So I think everyone is really high on Aubameyang, though 11 million is kind of a rich price. If Lacazette is able to work his way into the starting lineup, 9.5 is looking like exceptional value there. But Aubs on penalties, I'd say if you can afford him, if it works into your strategy, it's worth the extra 1.5.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, 11 million is, it's a little high for a team that's changing over so much of its team, but yeah, you know. That was very elegantly put, but you know what I'm saying. For a team that's first, you know, post Wenger season. But yeah, Aubameyang does seem like the kind of guy who might be kind of impervious to that. I mean, he jumped into an Arsenal squad that was not exactly, you know, pulled together or unified, you know, in the, you know, late winter, early spring of the season. And I mean, he was absolutely on fire, you know. I mean, he was just really like he sort of didn't matter what set of players you put around him. He was, you know, really attack minded, scoring goals. So, I have a version of a team right now that has Aubameyang in it. And I really like him as a draft option, you know, not that we're really going to talk too much about FPL draft right now, but it's, yeah, as a draft player, I would love him, because I think he's like a total set and forget kind of player. I mean, you could have him all season and he's just going to pick up a ton of goals.
Yeah. And one thing we learned about Arsenal last season was how the Europa League impacts a team like this. And it'll be pretty clear a few weeks when Europa starts, who is going to consistently get league starts and how seriously Emery plans on taking the Europa League. Right. And that will probably clear up a lot of question marks about Lacazette and Aubameyang and the rest of the attacking mids. So then just jumping into the midfield assets quickly, Ramsey is emerging as kind of a forum favorite. He's priced at 7.5 mil. Emery has already come out and said that Ramsey is, quote, an important player for Arsenal. So is that just gaming the preseason, the contract right. negotiations, or does he truly believe that? But at 7.5, Ramsey has shown that he can really perform as an FPL player. He has pretty good instincts in the box. He's had the summer off. When he's on song, he's a great FPL player. 8.5 for Ozil. If Ozil is having one of his good seasons, then yeah, of course, 8.5 is value. But we haven't seen that for a while. We certainly didn't see it in his World Cup performances. He was looking like his same old languid, turgid, I don't want to be here self. the biggest value of all would appear to be Mkhitaryan at 7 million, but there are a number of questions of how does Mickey fit into the starting lineup, depending on the formation. I don't see how Mickey can be left out of the squad. The sort of Borussia Dortmund collective that is now descending upon Arsenal, the team chemistry that could be there. I feel like Mickey is going to be a great FPL player this season.
Yeah, he or Ramsey. I guess Ramsey seems a little safer, assuming he does sign that contract. I think I would pay the extra 0.5 million just for the security, you know, if I was for my game week one squad. If I really wanted to have an Arsenal attacker and I maybe couldn't afford Lacazette or Aubameyang. Yeah, Ozil seems like too risky for me right now at that price. I mean, 8.5 million is, you can get some, I mean, for, you know, for another 8.5 million is like the same price as David Silva, you know, like it's, you know, so it's just, it's hard to, it could be, I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess you could say this about like, I mean, we could just stop the podcast right now and say everybody's a wait and see, you know, but it really feels true of a lot of the players in Arsenal. Like it's really hard to tell right now. Yeah. I mean, the whole, I mean, you're probably going to get into this in a second, but the whole defense is just like, who can you count on right now in that defense?
Yeah. Okay, so quick segue into the defense. New signing, the Uruguayan Lucas Torreira. He's appropriately priced at 5.0, deep-lying defensive midfielder. Joel E. Says, Torreira will be a big factor, in my opinion. He is a proper, solid defensive mid that Arsenal have lacked all these years. The logic there being that Arsenal defense, when the fixtures turn in game week 3, Torreira makes Arsenal's defensive assets look really sensational. Then that leads us to producer Mike DiPietro asks, how will Emery affect Arsenal defense? He seems to play a standard four at the back with PSG trying to figure out if the chosen GK will be worth a look. So yeah, let's look at Arsenal's defense. On the left, you've got competition between Monreal and Kolasinac. And on the right, you've got Bellerin and the new signing Lichtsteiner. Josh, you would agree, Lichtsteiner has not been brought in to displace Bellerin. He's an old man now. Is he 35, Lichtsteiner, or 34?
I think he turns 35 this season. But, I mean, he's, like, a really good player. I mean, Bellerin's going to have to beat him out for that spot, even if they got him on a free.
So maybe you're looking at a Europa lineup versus a league lineup, but you're definitely looking at competition for these spots. And I think the center backs are the safer options. And new signing Socrates, I had lunch today with a Greek colleague, very excited about Socrates. Any Greek player moving into the Premier League is a banner day.
Everyone's drinking the hemlock on this guy. I'm just not convinced.
Right. So this is what I was talking about. The
Borussia Dortmund joke. That was sad.
That's good. If I really knew what hemlock was, I would laugh at it as well.
It's like a weed, isn't it? It's like a poison weed.
Okay. Now that sounds dangerous. Don't encourage our listeners to drink poison. Socrates looks like he, I'm sure I'm saying that incorrectly, but looks like he's straight into the starting 11, priced at 5.5. Accordingly, other center back looks like a shooter's choice at this point. You've got, Mustafi, another Greek guy, Mavropanos.
Yeah. Geez,
Rob Holding and Callum Chambers. So who knows there? So there are just so many unknowns with this defense right now in terms of who starts it. Probably the prediction would be Monreal on the left, Socrates, and I don't know else, Mustafi at this point in the middle, and then Bellerin on the right. GK, this is a wait and see. Also, it doesn't really even matter because you probably don't want either of them. If you're looking to do a 4.5 rotation, then Lino and Cech both at 5.0, they're out. And if you're going 5.0, I really don't see any compelling case in any season to go for a 5.0 goalkeeper.
I guess if
except
you were
for like
play
a double game week situation.
I guess if you were going to play them every week, you know, I mean, if it was just a set and forget 5 million goalkeeper and then you paired them with a 4 million keeper, I guess that would be the way to do it. You know, if you really believed in Arsenal's defense, which is kind of hard to recommend right now. I mean, yeah, it's a good point, actually, because in my head I was sort of talking, I was thinking about Cech and Leno because I'm like, well, at that price, you know, it's so reasonable. But yeah, you're right. I think I'd rather just have two 4.5 million players than, you know, and have a spend a total of 9 million than I would spend 9.5 or if I'm going to spend 9.5, I'll just get a 5.5 million keeper and not rotate them, you know, so.
Yeah,
maybe they're out. I don't know. I'm still on the fence about it. You know, maybe a set and forget 5 million keeper is the way to go, Brandon. I don't know.
Listen, every season introduces a new unconventional thought strain on goalkeepers. Last year was the season of David De Gea. Maybe we go for a high-priced GK, whereas the season before it was what's his face on Burnley.
Yeah, who was the
four? Tom Heaton, he was the 4.5 dream. So the big takeaway for Arsenal here in closing is it's all about the attack. Ramsey and Aubameyang look to be the favorites, but Mkhitaryan and Lacazette could present tremendous value depending on what the starting 11 kind of shapes up to be.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. And I actually think that if Arsenal come out like with a renewed sense of purpose, given the amount of talent that's in that squad, I actually think the pricing of their defenders is not terrible. You know, I mean, 5.5 million. If Arsenal are contending for Champions League spots and are playing, it's a big if, right? I mean, because they haven't the last couple of years. But if they take things up a notch, then 5.5 is not an unreasonable price. So, but yeah, it's kind of a wait and see with that whole defense. I agree.
Cool. All right. So you've got Bournemouth, Josh. What do you got?
I've got Bournemouth. All right. Tom Campbell says, thoughts on Bournemouth, appalling defense, stagnant squad without much activity so far, a geriatric Defoe, but are there some hidden options for your fifth midfielder? All right. So I'm just going to let that question hang there, Brandon, as I
let it simmer. Let it marinate.
As I talk about Bournemouth. So Bournemouth have pretty strong opening fixtures. They have one of the best game week one fixtures, I'd say. They play Cardiff at home. West Ham away, and Everton at home in their first three. Even after that, I mean, if you look all the way through their first 10 weeks, it's actually quite a good start. I mean, Chelsea away is the only super difficult fixture in that whole 10-week run. So how much will the World Cup affect them? Basically not at all. In terms of incoming players, there's not a lot of business being done right now. The one guy that they've got, I'm kind of excited about him, right, because he's short. I love a short player. I love a short guy. David Brooks, he's a 10 million signing from Sheffield. He had 3 goals and 5 assists and 30 appearances. He's 21. He's an attacking midfielder. And Eddie Howe apparently rates him quite highly. I was reading a little bit about David Brooks.
This isn't the New York Times political columnist, David Brooks?
No, but sadly it's not. It'd be amazing to see the 62-year-old... conservative columnist David Brooks out there in the pitch, but no, it's just a play with glasses.
He gives Defoe a run for his money.
Yeah, so I mean, but they actually kind of need someone like him. So I wonder if he might actually be an option. He's available at 5 million. So I mean, I don't know that I could honestly say, bring David Brooks into your squad in game week one, but he's definitely on the radar as sort of a player to watch, right?
Okay,
so that's one player I'll recommend. In terms of the kind of key players in the team from an FPL perspective, it's kind of like pick your 4.5 million defender. You've got Charlie Daniels, who was pretty disappointing, to be honest. A lot of people, including myself, had him for kind of a long stretch last year. He had 1 goal and 3 assists, but that 1 goal was in game week 2. An amazing goal at home to Man City.
Yeah.
A disappointing 6 clean sheets on the season. I think he might have played nearly every match for the team this year, and nearly all matches anyway. And I mean, 6 clean sheets in 38 is really terrible.
You take him off penalties and you've taken his power away from him, it seems.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Jordan Ibe is maybe a player to think about. He's 5.5. Somehow I've got like all of the kind of semi crap teams as I was going through this.
Sorry about that, Josh.
Just the way it worked out. Jordan Ibe, 5.5 million, 2 goals and 6 assists, which is actually slightly better returns than I thought he had. Right. I mean, 2 goals and 6 assists. I wish he was 5 million. At 5.5, it's a little too high.
Yeah. He came on strong at the end of last season. I think it's taken him a long time to sort of settle into the Bournemouth squad.
Yeah.
I've always liked him. So I hope that he emerges more. And I think he could be a fun FPL player to have if he starts scoring and assisting on a more regular basis.
I've always liked him too. He's just a little inconsistent. Some players to avoid. I've got Nathan Ake, who he does offer more attacking threat, but the team just doesn't really play a style that helps defenders, right? It's just not.
Yeah.
They're just not a particularly defensive minded team. It's part of why Bournemouth are a fun team to watch. But it makes their defenders sort of. I mean, you look at these early fixtures, and you're like, man, I think I want a Bournemouth defender. And, I mean, the only the one player that I would definitely consider is Begovic, who is available at 4.5 million, could get you some save points. He's also an FPL player, so that always that any guy who's in the Premier League who also like actually like cares at all about the fantasy game is like immediately like a player I'll consider bringing into my team just as like a tribute, you know? So this is also like why I'm not going to finish in the top 10 this year.
And that's not a Pete Rose situation where Begovic isn't going to make it into the world's football player Hall of Fame because he's gambling on his own sport.
I guess not. Yeah. I guess there's no money involved. So they kind of get away with it. Right. Yeah, so I would have voted Ake. Ryan Frazier is another 5.5 million player, 5 goals and 3 assists, but he's pretty unreliable. You know, he sort of drifts. He's drifted in and out of that squad a little bit. Another short guy, so you'd think I'd like him, but I just find him to be a little too inconsistent. He's like he's one of those tempting players who it's like you can hit him just right.
Yeah, he blew up my game week one squad last season. So right, yeah, exactly. That's a hard avoid for me.
Callum Wilson and Jermaine Defoe, they're cheap. They're affordable. Both of them are really affordable. Wilson is 6 million. Defoe is 6 million. But Defoe is like 38 years old. I know he keeps himself in great shape, but like he really faded down the stretch. And Callum Wilson, I mean, it's, you know, we talked about him in last week's podcast, but just his inability to score was insane.
It was a disaster. Second
half of last season. It was a kind of a disaster. He lost his confidence, I think. Yeah. So the one under the radar player that I'll mention here is Josh King. Josh King isn't exactly under the radar because anyone who's played the game for a couple of years has either had Josh King in their team or thought about bringing him in. He started the season, I think he was 7.5 to start last season. So it was just a little too expensive for a team of Bournemouth's, you know, kind of table placement, you know, but,
right.
Now he's down to 6.5 million. You know, he scored, you know, 4 goals in his last 7 matches of last season. I think that it was like the team didn't quite work at first when they added Jermaine Defoe. It was always weird to add Defoe, and I don't really know that it really helped the team long term. But given their opening fixtures, I actually think I might like him. At 6.5 million, I definitely like him more than Cenk Tosun. As far as Will Zaha goes, I guess I probably still slightly prefer Zaha, but you know, if you're looking for a, you know, like a Mo Salah enabler and you just need that 0.5 million, I don't think the downgrade from Zaha to Josh King is that great. I actually think that may be a move to consider doing. And honestly, if you're going to bring Salah into your team, you're going to have to find some value, you know, some value options. So
there's going to be some trash in your squad with Salah there for sure.
Yeah. Overall, I can't say that I'm too excited about this team. Just because they have made a lot of changes, and it would have been fun. I mean, maybe they'll still make some big transfers and bring in some fresh blood, but let's hold out some hope that David Brooks. All right. I'm all in on Brooks.
Let's do it. I agree. They're not an exciting team. When they first came to the league, they were interesting, and I think they won a lot of people's hearts. But last year, there was no growth of any kind, and they almost regressed in terms of their performances. So they're going to have to show us that they're going to have to excite us, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, their defense was terrible, and they haven't made any changes yet. So that to me is the biggest issue.
Yeah, Nathan Ake is so interesting. 5 million is just Ake was intriguing when he was the 4.5 defensive loanee to Bournemouth from Chelsea.
Yeah.
And then it was irresistible, but 5.0 just knocks him off the table.
Yep.
All right, are we ready for Brighton?
I'm ready. Let's see it.
Brighton is an interesting counterpoint to Bournemouth because now they're being asked to do what Bournemouth is, you know, working really hard to do, push on in the Premier League. They've shown that they have the wherewithal to survive a season in the Premier League. Can they push on? The problem for Brighton here is that their opening run of fixtures is absolutely dreadful. They start in game week one away to Watford. Then it's United, Liverpool, hosting Fulham and Southampton, not bad. Then another doubleheader disaster with Spurs and Man City in game weeks 6 and 7. So for our good old friends Duff and Dunkey, I will always get those. let me just say that again. I could have.
Oh, come on. That was funny. You got to keep that in.
Yeah, right, right. The Dunk and Duffy. I need to come up with a better mnemonic device in my head. But the Hedge Knights, Dunk and Duffy, are not looking very appealing given those opening fixtures. Yeah, let's start with the attack. Glenn Murray is still the big man at 6.5. He, speaking of olds, going back to your Jermaine Defoe discussion, he turns 35 in September. He perhaps will come back in game week one with more hair plugs. It's unclear. It's
always possible.
But this dude is old. But despite all that,
you're younger than me, for the record.
Yeah, God. Yeah. So he's still old, but he managed 12 goals last season, and he's on penalties. So there's always a case to be made for Glenn if he can, still manage to get 60, 65 minutes a game.
I felt like he was getting I don't know if he got tired down the stretch last year or if he was just getting phased out, but if he definitely was not really part of the attack, I feel like, by the final weeks of the season. I remember actually because he was a kind of a popular double game week option. He was sort of disappointing.
Right. And the whole pen thing too, speaking of Glenn Murray fading, we'll get to Pascal Gross in a moment. There is some interest in Pascal Gross maybe taking pens off Glenn Murray for good. But just to round out the strikers, Jurgen Locati is a guy that Brighton signed for a record $15 million in the January transfer window last season. But we didn't see a whole lot of Locati. He had an issue with his hamstring that kind of kept him out of the starting lineup. Just 6 appearances for him, 1 goal and 1 assist. He came from PSV. So I think everyone is aware that, Dutch players, people who come from the Dutch league, it's very dicey, particularly with attackers. It doesn't always pan out, but, Locati looks like to be the most likely at this point, barring any future signings from Brighton, the one that's most likely to knock Glenn Murray off of his striker pedestal.
Don't you think Jurgen Locati sounds like a generic name and like a knockoff like FIFA game or something like that? It's like two Jurgen and Locati. Let's just put those two names together. It's like it doesn't sound like a real person's name.
No, totally. It's like a French Jurgen Klinsmann or something like that.
Exactly.
All right, so and there's this new signing, Florin Andone. I think
name, Florin Andone, a very simple English name, right? Florin Andone.
Yeah, that is the FIFA-sanctioned EA Sports FIFA name right there. 25-year-old Romanian. He's priced at 5.0, but I don't know that we're going to see a whole lot of this guy at the start of the season, but just putting him on your radar. So let's get to the big man. FPL Classico says Gross was the main man last season for Brighton, and that probably won't change, even though they have tough game weeks 2 and 3. Isn't he the type of player who acts as the main inspiration for a team like that? That he would be worth $7 million. So Gross is facing an uphill battle here with FPL managers because he's been up priced. He's been priced to sell, not to buy, at $7 million.
Yeah.
So my question for Gross this season is: will he become the German Christian Eriksen, or will he become the German Dimitri Payet? So Payet had that breakout season for West Ham, and then he basically had an emotional breakdown and had to leave the entire league, even though he was a joyful midfielder, set piece taker.
One of the great short players we'll see in the Premier League.
Yeah. Or does Gross have that staying power like Christian Eriksen does? A way to really stamp his name on the league over the next season or two. Gross took 1 penalty late last season, took it off of Glenn Murray. So the question is he going to emerge as the official pen taker? 7 goals and 8 assists last season. I have a thought on Gross. What is your immediate thought at Pascal Gross at $7 million?
He's just too expensive. I mean, their fixtures are bad. He's not really a goal. It's not like he's a out of position midfielder who like really is more of a striker, or, it's not like a Will Zaha situation. I just don't see it. I just don't see how. I mean, Brighton aren't that good either. No offense to Brighton supporters, but they're not. It's too much. This happens every year, right? Every year there are a couple teams that should have gone down but don't because of a combination of excellent play from a couple key players and some luck, you know, or just some teams that were really dreadful, like West Brom were for most of last season. And, you know, and then, you know, whoever the best player is gets priced too high. And this has happened with Gylfi Sigurdsson and other people too. So I really cannot recommend Gross.
I have nothing to add to that. I completely agree. I look forward to watching Gross play this season, but there's just no way to really fit him strategically into an FPL lineup. Other midfielders to watch, Izquierdo really came on strong at the end of last season. He's priced at 6 mil. He saw one start for Colombia in the World Cup. He shouldn't be too knackered from that 70 minutes that he played. But he is an exciting he plays on the left, does the whole cut in move, the Iron Robin cut in and rip it into the top corner. Mm-hmm. So six million for Izquierdo, far more intriguing than 7 million for Gross, I think. Knockhart at 5.5 mil. We talked about him briefly recently for some reason. I am not a believer in Knockhart at all.
Yeah.
The talismanic figure that will never translate from the championship into the Premier League.
I don't know. Being too harsh. I think he's an under the radar possibility, but not given their opening fixtures.
Yeah, he's a total tryhard. For your consideration, though, Dale Stevens. He is the classic fifth midfielder, priced at 4.5. He is a steady starter, at least he was last season.
Poor man's Morgan Schneiderlin.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, if you're looking to get luck into 3 points off your bench via a clean sheet, Dale Stevens is your man.
Right.
And let's just jump through their defense real quick, because I think this is the main reason to talk about Brighton. They were defensively strong, even though they kept 10 clean sheets last season. Is that solid? A lot?
I think it's solid for a team of their, for a promoted team, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah. So my big question here is the Nigerian signing Leon Balogun. He's priced at 4.5, same as Duncan Duffy. We saw a lot of him in the World Cup playing for Nigeria. He started all 3 matches for them. Looked like a decent, composed central defender. He's 30 years old, brings a lot of experience from Ligue 1's Mainz. Sorry, that is not my native tongue. So I'm very curious to see how that reshapes the Brighton defense. Are they going to go 3 at the back to fit Balogun in, or is he backup for Duffy and Dunk?
Right.
Duffy himself is suffering from, he's flagged 75% with a groin injury. Maybe they stick with 4 at the back and Duffy is sidelined for a while. Not sure how serious that injury is. But Dunk, the own goal maestro, 4 own goals last season. If anyone is going to score goals on this defense, I'm not spinning this into a joke. I think Dunk will be the guy. I think at some point last season, I said I'd eat my hat if Shane Duffy didn't score a goal in the Premier League. Mm-hmm. So, I've eaten a hat. I did eat a hat.
we've got video of it. We'll share it somewhere.
The guy here, though, that I have my eye on is Matty Ryan. He, for me, if you're looking at a 4.5 goalkeeper rotation, he was 3rd in saves in the Premier League last season, just behind Butland and Fabianski. He made 124 saves. And if you're talking about those 10 clean sheets and top of lots of save points, I think Matty Ryan should be rated as one to rotate in a 4.5 rotation.
Yeah, and he was pretty solid for Australia at the World Cup. I mean, they got knocked out in the preliminary stages. So I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be starting, you know, beginning in game week 1 for them. So yeah, I agree with that. I wonder if there are better goalkeeper rotations, but I like Ryan as a possible rotation option for sure. I like him more than their defenders. Than the center backs.
It is merciful to have these Brighton defenders priced at 4.5, because when the fixtures turn, it will be easy to bring them in.
Yep.
So I'm not worried about that. We can have them when we want them. And there are actually quite a lot of good, decent 4.5 defensive options to pick from that are not on Brighton.
Yeah. Come to Burnley, Brandon. Opening fixtures, strong. plus minimal World Cup commitments. You know I like that.
Absolutely.
Really like their opening eight fixtures. Really only one truly difficult fixture in their way. They play Man United, but even then it's at home in game week four. And you know, Man United might just be adding in, you know, players like Lukaku starting in game week, you know, three or four. So, you know, even that could be a clean sheet possibility. World Cup doesn't really affect them. Incoming players, it's to be determined. The one thing that in terms of outgoing players, the Pope versus Heaton thing may get resolved because there has been some talk that that Pope may actually go to Liverpool. And after some of the videos of Karius that have come out in the last week or so, I do wonder. I mean, I don't know. They may try to get someone. I mean, obviously, they've talked about trying to get Alisson from Roma. It sounds like that price is going to be too high. I mean, I think Roma, you know, claimed they were offering, you know, they would sell them for $85 million or something like that. But okay. It was something insane. It was basically like we gave you Mo Salah for, you know, the cost of a nice IKEA table, and he's gonna finish third in the Ballon d'Or this year. We're not gonna make that mistake again. So
Liverpool basically grew tired of raping Southampton, so now they've moved on to Serie A.
I think so. Yeah. So incoming players, there hasn't been too much news yet. I was kind of trolling around looking for transfer news for Burnley, and I haven't seen too much. Maybe our friend Dave from Burnley can educate us on Twitter later on. But for now, it looks like it's going to be the same group that we've had before. And I actually think there's some really interesting. It's almost a guarantee I'm going to have at least one Burnley player in my team going into game week one. I really like Southampton, Watford, and Fulham in their first three. Even though two of those three are away, I really like a couple players that I like. I like Chris Wood, who I sort of put him in that 6.5 million category with Josh King. I might actually like him a little better than Josh King. He had 10 goals and one assist last season. He was also injured for, I think he missed about 10 games. So when he was healthy, he was really banging them in. For their kind of old school approach, he's a perfect fit. You know, he's just a big lad, you know, and just a pretty clinical finisher too. I like him a little more than Ashley Wood. I've seen talking about like
Ashley Barnes.
Ashley Barnes, excuse me. Who's Ashley Wood? Is that somebody? I've written down Ashley Wood here, but I don't think that's anybody. I hope that's not Ashley, like a porn Wood star or something, and I've done something really embarrassing. Ashley Barnes, who's...
I think you may actually be thinking of Ashley Westwood. Also plays for Burnley.
Right. Ashley Barnes, 9 goals, no assists, $6 million. To me, Chris Wood is worth the extra 0.5 million. I see him. I know you got some points out of Barnes at the end of last year.
Yeah, Barnes was a legend there, you know, like game weeks 30 to 36 or something like that.
Yeah. So I think an opening, you know, if you really want, you know, I don't know. I think that if you're going heavy in the midfield, I think Chris Wood or Josh King are two options I consider. I just think that Burnley's a better team than Bournemouth. So I think that maybe puts Chris Wood a little bit ahead. I just think that I see Burnley maybe, I don't know, like, you know, it'll be like a tighter game where maybe like, I don't know, like where he could score up a set piece goal or something like that. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's all kind of guesswork at this point, but I do rate Chris Wood a little more highly than Ashley Barnes. They're both solid enablers regardless. The other player that I like here is Goodmanson, who had 2 goals and 7 assists last season, 7 bonus points, available for $6 million. He did play for Iceland in the World Cup, but they got knocked out early as well. It feels like he was pretty solid all of last season, but I feel like by the end of the season, I mean, he was just on every set piece. You know, he was just, I love players like that. I love it. Is a fantasy player who's on every set piece is so valuable because, you know, there's a lot of cheap ways to pick up assists in the fantasy game. And I don't know. I just, you know, like you could get it off a corner, you know, obviously he could score on free kicks, things like that. They've got a lot of tall guys that he can, you know, throw a set piece into in the box. So, Yeah, I think that Goodmanson is definitely an option. I think that either Goodmanson or Wood is going to be in my team going into game week one.
Yeah, I think I would prefer Goodmanson over Wood. Just I don't know why. I think it's the set piece point you were making, and if the goals start getting spread around, which maybe right. Wood is just going to clean up.
The defenders are. They have a lot of talented 5 million defenders. There's not a lot to separate them. I think that Tarkowski is probably the safest, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Ben Mee, maybe. I mean, between those two, it's really tough. It's hard to say.
And they're both totally nailed on. I mean, they were a sensational duo last season, and it's not like they're aging out of that squad. I think they're just coming into their own.
I mean, Kevin Long was so good. You know,
yes, so it's true. I've got depth.
Yeah. So I guess maybe I would see Long possibly challenging me at some point, possibly, which maybe just puts Tarkowski a little bit ahead as a player I'd look at. I don't like their fullbacks quite as much, even though they've actually have slightly more attacking returns. Players to watch that are sort of under the radar, Charlie Taylor and Phil Bardsley. They're both 4.5 million, and it's possible that they both could earn starting fullback nods. Charlie Taylor was actually pretty good last season when he was filling in for Loughton. So, I think he was filling in for
Ward.
For Ward. Thank you. So, I think, I don't know. What do you think about Burnley? What are your thoughts? I mean, you mentioned in last week's podcast they didn't end the season keeping a lot of clean sheets. So, is that still
they did? Well, I feel. Yeah, they faded a little bit, but that actually doesn't make me super downbeat about Burnley because I am part of the Sean Dyche fan club. I think he has done a really good job. Going back to what I was saying about Bournemouth earlier, about how you settle into the league, Burnley feels more a fixture than Bournemouth does at this point. And they're sort of filling that Stoke City role. That said, I think they still manage some pretty entertaining attacking play in various matches. My huge worry with Burnley is their tie with Aberdeen, July 26th, and then the reverse is on August 2nd. That's going to determine whether or not Burnley is playing in the Europa League this season. Right. And if that happens, Burnley is completely screwed because I'm not sure they have the depth or the energy to go play in the hell mouths of Eastern Europe on Thursday night and then come and put in a shift in the weekend.
You're right. I should have mentioned that. I don't know that it affects their forwards and midfield quite as much as the defenders. It could make the defenders a little less compelling as options. And I don't know. I still, we'll see. I mean, they have this run in game weeks, 5 through 8, where they play Wolves, Bournemouth, Cardiff, and Huddersfield. And I think you'd want a defender for those, but maybe you can hold off until then. I mean, two of their first three fixtures are away, but as I mentioned before, I think they're some of their attacking players are worth considering.
Let's go to Wales, shall we?
Let's do it.
Cardiff City, Neil Warnock. He rides again, Joshua. I know you missed him since his brief stint with QPR. Yeah.
Neil Warnock, right? I loathe this guy.
He looks a bit like a witch, I have to say. So
He looks like a warlock, is what he looks like.
Yeah, Neil Warlock, I think, is the appropriate. Okay. All right. We somehow got there. We got to the right place with Mr. Warlock. Opening fixtures for Cardiff City, newly promoted team. They've got Bournemouth away for their opening fixture, then Newcastle, Huddersfield. Not bad. Then it gets bad. So Arsenal, bad. Chelsea, Man City, Burnley, and Spurs. Absolutely devastating.
There's not a win in there, right?
No. I mean, they're basically going to have to put some points on the board in the first three game weeks if they have any hope of survival. So just some brief background on Cardiff City. For those who have never heard of this team before, they finished second in the championship last season, largely on the back of their defense. They kept a whopping 19 clean sheets. Their attack was only the sixth best in the league. 21 of their goals came from set pieces, though. So the defense really comes out ahead with if you're looking at Cardiff. Great, looking good for clean sheets, lots of set piece goals. I'm going to run through the defensive options right now. Their team captain, Sean Morrison, cleaned up with 7 goals and 1 assist. He's 27 years old in central defense. And his partner in crime back there, it's Sol Bamba, also priced at 4.5. He scored 4 goals and 1 assist last season for Cardiff in the championship. So if
Sol
you're
Bamba
looking
is
for
kind of in that Jurgen Locadia category.
Yeah, real name, fake
knock
name.
Off,
sure.
Knock off FIFA name.
So the debate here is, do you like goals or do you like bonus points? Sol Campbell rates higher on all the stats that are going to get you Sol Bamba. He's going to rate higher on what it takes to get bonus. Say Cardiff does get a clean sheet. But Morrison is probably worth the risk just to sacrifice 1 or 2 bonus just to see if you can get a goal. Then you're really going to lock in. Then,
too
Josh,
bad
you're really locking in the bonus.
Did here. Neil Warlock call the cops on you?
Neil Warlock does not like the slanderous podcast of Always Cheating. He sent the police here to get me.
It's too bad that Sean Morrison is at $5 million. At $4.5 million, he'd be like such a fun – like he'd be like the perfect player because only FPL nerds would have him in their team.
Yeah.
Or in Cardiff City fans, I guess. But I mean, yeah. 7 goals is pretty fluky for a defender, right? I mean, I do love this. Hard to see him replicating that.
I picked up this stat on Fantasy Football Scout with Sean Morrison. He had 50 goal attempts last season, a rate of 1 goal attempt every 66.6 minutes, Mark of the Beast. That is shy of Marcus Alonso level. Last year, Marcus Alonso had a shot every 44 minutes. But if you're looking at Premier League center backs, Sean Morrison wiped the floor with them in terms of goal attempts per minute.
Wow. So he is a center back then. That's really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And a quick word of warning about goalkeeper Etheridge. He plays for the Philippines national team, mm-hmm. and the Asian Cup, which will become a huge factor in January. Anyone who's involved with the Asian Cup, and I'm looking at you, Heung-min Son, you could be missing up to 5 weeks of the Premier League season come January. So do not look to Cardiff for your goalkeeper rotation. That could be a problem.
Fair enough. I'll stay away from Etheridge. Yeah. Does he have a first name, or is it's
Melissa.
Just Etheridge?
Melissa. Right? Yeah. Okay. In the attack, the exciting signing was Bobby Reid, a 25-year-old English striker who was the third highest goal scorer with Bristol City last season in the championship. Scored 19 goals. He also came away with 7 assists. Very fast, energetic striker. He's priced at $5.5 million. I think he's going to find his way into a lot of templates for your third budget striker. But yeah. You have to keep an eye on transfer news for Cardiff. They've been linked to guys like Solomon Rondon, who was looking for a Premier League club to sign on with. Maybe Warlock would play Bobby Reid and Rondon together up front, sort of like big guy, little guy. Fast guy, slow guy.
Yeah.
But 5.5 is a great price for a striker who has that kind of pedigree coming out of the championship.
I talked a little bit about Reid on last week's podcast. I mean, you know, I won't pretend that I've like seen a billion Cardiff City matches, but you know, I mean, he's a short guy, big fan, right? Can't mm-hmm. say that enough this year. I'm going all in on shorties, Brandon.
It's kind of ironic that you're a big fan of a short guy, if you follow me.
I'm supporting all the shorties. If I can't decide between two players this year, Brennan, I'm going with the shorter guy. Okay, that's my rule.
I love it.
This season, I won't affect my prognosticating on the podcast, but just personally, everyone should know that I'll be going with the shorties. If you are planning to wild card in. Very early on, let's say you're planning to wild card by game week 4, or you're planning to play a 4-4-2 and you can have kind of a third striker that you don't need to play every game week. Mm-hmm. That Bournemouth, Newcastle, Huddersfield run in their first 3 matches is actually pretty solid, right? I mean, that is like that actually makes Bobby Reed kind of compelling, I think. Yeah. You know, like, yeah, cheap and good fixtures.
Yeah, no, I agree. He's actually in my bus team right now. So,
yeah. And I think, you know, remember like with Huddersfield last year? I mean, there's something to be said for a promoted squad that just comes up like firing, right? Like just like really like excited to be in the league, like a lot of adrenaline, a lot of energy, comes out of the gate really strong. That could be Cardiff this year. So, yeah, I think we're going all in on Bobby Reed, Brandon.
One midfielder to watch, Junior Hoylett, priced at 5.5 mil. He scored 11 goals last season, and we know he's a favorite of the Warlock. He followed Neil from QPR over to Cardiff. Yeah. So you probably remember him from.
He was the man who was too good to play for Canada until he got old, and then suddenly started playing for Canada.
It is the legend of the man who refused to play for Canada.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll get to the final five teams. Same old podcast, always cheating. Brandon, we're back. Before we get any further, just a quick topic to break things up for a moment. Harry Haslam asks us how our UK plans are coming along, and we have some news on that front.
Yeah, we have plane tickets. We have a definite date range. That we're flying in on October 4th.
Yep.
And then we leave that Monday. So we're gearing the trip around the Fulham Arsenal match that's going to be at Craven Cottage on Saturday or Sunday, and
to be determined.
And then we're hoping to see maybe a Europa League match on Thursday night, and a match on Sunday as well. Maybe that'll take us north of London. Maybe we'll get
if we went to Burnley to watch a Europa League match on a Thursday night, that would be amazing. That might actually be the highlight of the trip.
That would be pretty sick. So we're in the early stages. We've already put the word out on Twitter. We're looking for recommendations of neighborhoods in London where we can set up an Airbnb, a home base, and we're gonna bring loonies or pounds, whatever currency it is that you use in the UK, to buy our listeners some beers. We want to meet you guys. We want to hang out. Have a bit drinks. Of an always cheating meetup while we're there. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah. We're like, basically Brent and I are just us, no family. We're there for 5 days and we've been saving up for this trip. So we're going to blow it out. We're going to go to every game that we can go to, like anything we can get tickets for, you know, we're going to spend the money and we're just going to do it. I want to have a drink in my hand the entire time that I'm there. Like I want to fall asleep with a drink. Like I want to I want duct tape drink to my hand as I'm sleeping, just in case I want to wake up.
What was the game that one played in college? Edward 40 hands, where you, you walk into a house party and you have a 40 ounce duct tape to eat your left hand and your right hand.
Right. Yeah. So we're looking at Airbnbs right now. We're trying to figure out what neighborhood. A lot of people on Twitter in particular have given us some really solid recommendations. So thank you to everybody on there. So it's going to be awesome. And it'll be for those October 6th and 7th fixtures. Maybe there'll be a Friday night match. That'd be awesome. Definitely going to Fulham Arsenal at Craven Cottage. Other matches to be determined. So more to come on that.
Cool. All right. Let's speaking of London, next up is Chelsea.
Good transition. Chelsea, it's a weird team, Brandon. They have just fired Conte, who called their bluff. It was amazing. Everyone knew that they wanted him out. He wanted to be fired instead of resign in order to get the severance package. So he went through all of the rigmarole of preseason training, everything. They really forced them to fire him, which they finally did.
Ever a fan of MASH, Josh? Do you remember the TV show MASH?
The TV show? Sure, yeah.
And Klinger, he wanted to get sent home from Korea so bad that he just wore a dress every day.
Right.
We've done away with a lot of these gender stereotypes and good riddance to them. But do you think Conte was doing the Klinger? Like he was just wearing dresses to the training pitch? Dare.
Okay, I'm a pretty serious fan of the Premier League, Brandon. We host a weekly podcast about it. I don't know that I completely understand why Conte had to be fired. Is it? Am I? did I just miss something big? I mean, I know that like he wasn't getting along with Abramovich. Just like he's such a great manager. It's kind of weird, right? That he like had to go.
It seemed like a lot of players just hated his guts. I don't know if this was Photoshop tomfoolery on social media, but apparently Cesc Fabregas was out there liking tweets that said, yeah, like, thank God he's gone.
It's very mature of Fabregas.
they have a notoriously toxic locker room, right?
Yeah. Chelsea does. Yeah. That's just a weird. I'm sure Chelsea fans know a lot more about that, but regardless, Conte is gone. It looks very likely that Mauricio Sarri is going to be the next manager. He has been doing great things at Napoli the last couple of seasons. We don't know too much about what Sarri would do. I mean, Sarri was not playing a three at the back, you know, style at Napoli. So, you know, there's suggestions that, you know, some players like Alonso could be in trouble, could flip the other way, and Alonso could actually just basically play as a winger, in which case he'd be even more valuable. So it's, you know, he's a little up in the air. The whole team is really up in the air because, you know, almost there are very few teams in the Premier League that will be more affected by the World Cup. Even a team like Man City is actually slightly less affected because some of their, you know, a lot of their players got knocked out early. But there's
and
so
they
many
also
Belgians
have a million players.
Right, exactly. So here's just a few of the players who will be affected by the World Cup. Probably won't be starting the first two or three weeks. Courtois, Hazard, Giroud, Willian, Conte. I mean, you could even throw in, you know, Cahill, possibly Ruben Loftus-Cheek. Christensen made the round of 16. Moses, Azpilicueta. I mean, Moses and Azpilicueta were knocked out in the early rounds, but they might get a little extra rest time too, especially someone like Azpilicueta who, like, you know, always plays 50 matches a season. So just a lot of turmoil. There's also talk that Jorginho, who's a defense, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
I think it's Jorginho.
Jorginho, thank you. Yeah. A defensive midfielder. I'm not known for my pronunciations, sadly. A defensive midfielder from Napoli, heavily rumored to be coming over, and talk that Sarri is not enamored with Conte. And I'm like, I don't get that, man. I know that wasn't the most articulate way to phrase that, but
is that true? They would want to just play Jorginho and Conte together?
It's possible, but there are some rumors that Sarri is not as enamored with Conte. It's like, I'm trying to think of who wouldn't love Conte? Like, what? He's everybody's taste, right? He's like Coca-Cola.
He's not Conte? New Coke. Conte is classic Coke. He's Coca-Cola. That's how lovable he is. Yeah.
Yeah. So Dries Mertens, who's been, who's on the Belgian team, has played quite well, is also rumored to be a possible move. He was, you know, another Napoli player. So I don't know about the Dries Mertens thing. I mean, this kind of happens every time a manager jumps from one club, from a bigish club to another club. You know, there's sort of all their top players get rumored to move with them. Mm-hmm, yeah. So, you know, we'll see if it actually happens. But, if that happened, that would be trouble for Morata. If it doesn't happen, I actually wonder if we're overlooking Morata a bit. I mean,
we absolutely are. Even if Giroud turns out to be the favored striker there, which I can't believe we're having this conversation. Yeah, he's going to be completely knackered by the World Cup. Morata passes my Instagram test. He is all over Chelsea's Instagram right now. He is the best player as far as Chelsea's Instagram is concerned.
Exactly. I think that he's ready to go. I mean, you know, and Sarri will actually know him too, you know, because Morata played in Serie A too. So you wonder if Sarri will maybe get the best out of him in a way that we didn't see last season. 11 goals, 6 assists last season. I mean, not terrible return. I think that the only issue is that 9 million price point is a little tricky. It can be sometimes. You know, Giroud at Arsenal was often at that price point, or 8.5 million or so, where it's just like, you almost want to spend the extra 1 or 2 million for the sure thing, or go down 7 million, for the Arnautovic type, and then invest that money elsewhere. So, but if he comes out firing, then at 2.2% ownership right now, I really like him. So given all the stuff that we know about how the World Cup's going to affect them, there are a couple of players to at least keep an eye out for, possibly even start your season with. It wouldn't be unreasonable. Would it be reasonable? I don't know. It would be it'd be an option anyway, which is Azpilicueta and Alonso, both priced at $6.5 million. Azpilicueta, 2 goals, 6 assists, 25 bonus points. Probably the player who's most locked into starting game week one, maybe in the entire team. Marcus Alonso, 7 goals, 2 assists, 15 bonus points. Possible starting concern, however, and I just don't know. I just honestly, I might just avoid this whole squad at the start, with the possible exception of Alvaro Morata. I don't know. I mean, I would wait until game week 3 or 4 with them. I mean, their fixtures get really good starting in game week 4, basically, right, where they play Bournemouth and Cardiff at home back to back. But I'm not sure that you need them before then.
I'm intrigued by this rumor that Sarri likes Emerson, and at 5.5, root into that Chelsea defense. I really can't believe that he would become a regular starter. Not that I know anything, but
yeah.
The choice between Alonso and Azpilicueta, if either of them take off, will be a big choice. It's nice that Alonso is now back to 6.5, and it's an easy switch between the two.
Right. It turns out that the Emerson that Sarri likes is the 19th century transcendental philosopher, Ralph Waldo Emerson. One of those things that got lost in translation.
Fair play.
Yeah, he likes Emerson and Thoreau. So, yeah, I wouldn't look at him for FPL. okay. So, yeah, I think this is a team that I would mostly avoid, at least until game week 4. Right. I don't even love that Newcastle away fixture in game week 3. I wait till game week 4.
Yeah. Okay. So Crystal Palace, this is Roy Hodgson's team now. He came in late in the game, salvaged what was one of the worst openings to a season in history. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And Roy is known for being an organized sort of solid. Total alpha dog. He's just barking orders, pacing up and down the sideline. Yeah, the jacket comes off immediately.
Sure. He's a fire breather.
Wouldn't that be amazing if Hodgson shows up for the first game and he does the full Sean Dyche? He, like, shaves his head but has those weird pointy sideburns and has a goatee.
even the thought of Hodgson with his shaved head is, like, so – I can't quite see it.
All right, so here's the real news about Crystal Palace. Their opening run of fixtures is very tantalizing. With the exception of a Liverpool home match in game week 2, it's Fulham, Watford, Southampton, Huddersfield, Newcastle, Bournemouth, and Wolverhampton in the first 8 game weeks. That's pretty amazing.
I'm going to need to have Will Zaha, aren't I?
So there are these rumors floating around with Zaha that he's being linked to Borussia Dortmund. I don't know if what's going on there, if there's any truth to that. But Palace must pay whatever price that they have to pay to keep Zaha on this team. But because without them, I mean, this is what happened to Palace at the start of last season, right? He got injured in the first game and then they could not score a goal.
Right.
So they really need to keep him healthy and keep him on the team. So the big talking point with Zaha, of course, is that he's 7 million and reclassified from a midfielder to now a forward. Will this take him off the table, or is there the Firmino effect? So do you remember Firmino went through the same reclassification process at the end of at the start of last season, and it turned out to work like a charm for Firmino. It kind of kept his price not artificially low, but it kept it low, and he was still scoring goals. And it also, I think it the conventional wisdom is being reclassified as a forward helps your bonus output.
Right. And if you're a goal scorer, you get more points, you get more bonus points for that. For each
That's
goal.
True. Right. Yeah. Right, right, right. So 9 goals and 7 assists in total for Zaha last season. Peter Locke asked, 7 million, surely a bargain, especially when Millie is at 6.5. So, yeah, Milivojevic, which we can touch upon quickly.
So sad.
He got a huge bump at 6.5.
Insane. I mean, I know he's on pens, but, man, at 6 million, I like him. At 6.5, it's funny how that 0.5 can make such a big difference, isn't it? But it really seems too much, 6.5.
Yeah, definitely. I do think that Milivojevic does more in open play than he gets credit for.
Sure.
I mean, he does drop quite deep to get the ball, but he is on a lot of set pieces, and He did score, I think, two goals from open play last season.
Yeah, he'll never have a season like he did last year. I don't know. I mean, he's just not. That's not his game, really. I don't know. So I'm not feeling Millie as much as useful as he was for my team last year.
Yeah. Migtavius on Twitter, who I believe is a true blue Crystal Palace fan, asks the question, how do you feel about Zaha's FPL appeal if he leaves Palace? Less appealing, more appealing? So forget the Dortmund rumors. What if Zaha were to go to another Premier League club? Or is it a special magical thing that happens just at Selhurst Park for Zaha?
Well, I mean, he when he was younger, he moved from Palace to Man United. You know, it didn't work out. He's, you know, probably a better finisher now, more confident player than he was four years ago. It'd be affected, but his price would be so low that he'd probably still be worth it anyway, right? I mean, if he was actually going to start, the concern was that he'd move to Spurs or something, and then just be sort of this rotation player who was, getting a few matches here and there. And, I hope he doesn't move. I think he's really appealing. I think the fixtures are good. There's just a lot to like about him. You know, I mean, he really was playing as a forward. I mean, I guess the concern is that he stops playing as a forward. Right. Yeah. And then he's a midfielder playing out of position, or classified out of position as a forward. Right. And that would be the concern.
So that's the huge question. Does Palace sign an actual striker? Because what they're left with here is just a murderer's row of people who won't be starting. Right. Well, I don't know. Christian Benteke, they stuck with him throughout his incredible goal drought last season. Three goals. But yeah. 7 assists is not going to cut it for a 6.5.
Insane. So, insanely high number of assists.
Yeah. I do wonder if Benteke gets sold somewhere and that, which would mean they lean on Zaha even more if they don't sign anybody. But, Sorloth, as much of a lord that he is here on the Always Cheating podcast, nowhere near nailed onto that starting 11.
So sad.
Connor Wickham, he's back. What do you remember when Connor Wickham was? He was playing at Sunderland. He was going to somehow save them, and then he moved to Palace, and he's just not been able to stay healthy.
Yeah, he belongs in League Two or something. I don't know. Yeah, he should be playing for Portsmouth.
Yeah. All right. We talked about Milivojevic being priced up to 6.5. That's really a tough sell. Kind of expensive, even though he did have a sensational run on penalties last season. Andres Townsend, he's rumored to go to Newcastle. My note here, I like, apparently Newcastle is interested. I am not. Yeah. And Loftus-Cheek, his loan is over. He's back to Chelsea. You do feel like Palace might be missing a guy like Loftus-Cheek. I wonder if they're going to move on him. Before the transfer window closes.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it'll depend on what Sarri wants to do. It'd be great if he got loaned out to someone, Palace or someone else. He might be too.
I mean,
his
career is so much on the upward trajectory, getting into the World Cup squad, getting some minutes there in Russia. Everyone loves this guy, so he needs minutes.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So we really need to talk about defense with Palace. We talked about the incredible opening run of fixtures for Palace, and there are some bargains to be had. James Tompkins, he is priced to buy at £4.5 million. I don't know if you're keyed into Tompkins' spurt of goal scoring toward the end of last season. He ended up with three goals.
Yeah.
And he's a guy that Hodgson seems to rate and like. I don't see how he would fall away from the starting lineup. So at 4.5, I really do like him, particularly if you're comparing him to the other big hitters in the back line, and that's Sacco and PVA. PVA, right. Terrible defender, but the best defensive attacking player that Crystal Palace has. But that 5.5 price tag for PVA
is a bit high. Yeah.
Yeah. That's like comparatively an Alonso level price for
their
Crystal
fixtures,
Palace defender.
I like the stability, the year over year stability with them keeping Hodgson. I don't think it's complete insanity to have, to have PVA. I wish that they weren't playing two away fixtures in their first three, with one of them being a, and then the middle match being a home match with Liverpool. You know, it doesn't scare me off Zaha or even some of their midfielders, but it does scare me off their defenders a little bit.
Yeah. I just want to make one quick point about Sacco. He is a bonus point magnet. He played, because of injury, he played far fewer minutes than the likes of Tompkins did. But I lost my place in my notes. He finished on 18 bonus points for the season.
Wow.
And if you look at Tompkins, who had three more clean sheets on his record than Sacco did, finished with just 9 bonus points. And he scored those goals, as I mentioned. So I do wonder if it's worth the upgrade to 5.0 for Sacco, looking at the clean sheet potential with Palace and the bonus points that you're going to be raking in.
Yep, that makes sense. And I see you have a note here about Gaita, too. That was the keeper that they had looked at. Didn't they? I think they bought him in January, and then he wasn't actually able to join the club in the summer.
Yep. Yeah, so he's one of those that you throw into the conversation about 4.5 keeper rotations. We were just talking about Matty Ryan, and we'll talk about Lucas Fabianski in our next preview pod.
Yep.
But I think he's an interesting option if you're looking for a GK rotation.
Yep. I think so too, actually. He's not in my bus team right now, but maybe he should be. By the way, a bus team for anybody who's new to the podcast is the set and forget team that you do every week, just in case you get hit by a bus and happen to miss setting your team right before the matches start. It's always good to have that bus team ready to go just in case. So,
right. And God forbid you perish from getting hit by the bus. You don't want to be remembered for having a really terrible lineup.
Exactly. That'd be fate worse than death. All right. Everton, opening fixtures. They are fantastic. They play away to Wolves, home to Southampton, away to Bournemouth, home to Huddersfield, home to West Ham. You know, so Mike DiPietro, our new producer, Brandon, says, I think there's some
Mr.
new
producer.
I think there's some value in Everton, new manager, great fixtures. I'm looking at you, Gilfie. You know, the World Cup's not going to affect them too much. Pickford, was starting keeper for England, played extremely well. He might get some rest. I mean, I guess it's possible he misses a week. He is in that 5 million keeper price range, which we talked about earlier, being sort of a tricky price, unless you're just going to use them as a set it and forget keeper. I have one important note here. Just I have an important note that every year, really, I guess starting last year when they came into new ownership, the most ridiculous transfer rumors seem to accompany Everton. They are in for every good player. Right. Like Neymar will be linked with Everton at some point this summer. And it's complete nonsense. I don't know who's propagating it. I don't know if it's like one random person who just like
you're serious. These.
Yeah. I like don't believe any of the stuff I'm hearing about Everton. Like they're not going to get Yerry Mina. There's no way. Like one of the best center backs in the World Cup is going to leave Barcelona to go to Everton for like 20 million. Like that is complete nonsense. It's not going to happen. Do you disagree?
No, I don't disagree. I do think it is nonsense. I mean, I know they have the new ownership that came in last season and they just have boatloads of money. So
who did they buy really? You know, they bought Gylfie Sigurdsson and Theo Walcott.
It's true. I am very conspiratorial with this, with all the media stuff. Like I do wonder if it's layers and layers, like if the Everton staff put out rumors that Neymar might be coming, does then that make it more appealing for a lesser world-class player that they're trying to woo?
I think that's
not that that would work. Yeah. It's ludicrous, but
It doesn't really matter
seeding the marketplace.
It's possible. Yeah. But I mean, they were in for like Axel Witsel and a bunch of other solid players last offseason. And then they basically ended up with exactly the kind of players you'd expect a team like them to bring in, right? Which is like, you know, players on the wrong side of 30 who are
Tosin really, and Walcott.
Yeah, Walcott and Gylfie Sigurdsson and, you know, like just kind of, I mean, Tosin. Okay, so Tosin is the player that to me, he's kind of an avoid. He had 5 goals, no assists. It's unclear how much Marcus Silva rates him. I like Silva as a manager. I mean, it's, you know, things didn't work out at Watford. I do think he's a good manager. Just Tosin, given all the players we've already talked about in this podcast, you know, Zaha and Josh King and and the Burnley strikers, you know, Chris Wood in particular, I rate all of those players more highly than Tosin, even given their fixtures. So the question is, you know, is there a midfielder or a forward that you would want, you know, given their fixtures? And, I don't want to just reject it out of hand, you know, because there probably is some value here, and it's just going to take some work to figure out who it is. Like, I think that this is a team you're just going to have to watch some friendlies. You're going to have to see who's playing well going into the season. You know, Theo Walcott, you know, he started okay and kind of faded, but he's only 6.5 million. He could be an option. I mean, I would love it if Yannick Bolasie finally came back, right? Like, you know, terrible injury, basically missed a season. You know, a player that there's some players in their team who just didn't work out last year. You know, there's Nikola Vlasic, you know, the heir to the Vlasic pickle dynasty, who, you know, is priced at 5 million, could be a player
great who makes pickles. His way into
great pickles, could make his way into the Everton side. I mean, Davy Klaassen is still on this team. Remember how, like, we were talking about Klaassen like he was the next Christian Eriksen at the start of last season. Now he's a 6 million rando who had no goals and no assists last. I mean, he only played 248 minutes last season.
It's hard to crack that Dutch league glass ceiling, Josh.
It is.
You know, so, if Jozy Altidore couldn't do it, I don't see how Davy Klaassen could. Yeah.
So because I can't give you an Everton pick right now does not mean that I think you should reject Everton as assets for your team going into game week one. I just think that we need to wait a few more weeks to know who those players might be. So that's all I'll say about that. You know, Marcus Schneiderlin is another under the radar option. I talked about him on last week's podcast. If he starts and they're rejuvenated under Silva, 4.5 million fifth midfielder. I mean, you know, he's not that far removed from, you know, he had 4 goals a couple seasons ago, 5 goals a couple seasons before that. I actually didn't realize he'd been in the league since 2013. I thought he joined.
Yeah, he was my original fifth midfielders, because I think he was priced at 4.5 when he was at Southampton, and he'd come in and score the odd goal.
Yeah, so possibly Schneiderlin as a fifth mid. The forwards, Tosin, maybe Calvert-Lewin, you know, earns a starting spot. So let's just wait and see on this team. The defense, I don't like Baines at 5.5. Keane, I think is a reasonable pick at 5 million. It'd be interesting to see who they pair with Keane. It's not clear who the other center back. I don't know if they might end up buying somebody. But if not, you're looking at Ashley Williams or Phil Jagielka. It's
got to be Jagielka. You know, Ashley Williams basically set fire to his career last season.
But Jagielka's like 36. So I'm assuming that they're going to bring in somebody new to pair with. So this whole Everton team, let's just move on from Everton. We'll talk more about them in future podcasts.
All right, on to Fulham, the tiki-taka of the championship. Won the third place match, the most expensive or most valuable, or whatever the cliche is, game in football. So here they are. They're promoted after a very respectful run in the championship. Big signings to talk about. Did I put that diplomatically enough?
I know you weren't. I thought there was going to be more excitement when you got to Fulham. This is the first time you have been able to talk about Fulham's FPL prospects on the Always Treating podcast.
Yeah, exciting. Well, so just broadly speaking, it's exciting, but it's also terrifying because Fulham, they so perfectly constructed a squad to succeed in the championship. And it was through a series of canny loan moves with guys like Mitrovic and Target. And the squad that won that third place match, it just all kind of fell away. Their loanees left. They lost Fredericks, who played really well for them. He's over at West Ham now. Manny, they have no fullbacks. They have no striker. You go to the FPL page, they have 12 players to choose from. So I'm slightly terrified that Fulham is going to roll up into the Premier League and they're just going to get steamrolled trying to play their Huddersfield style.
Where's
glorious
the optimism? My goodness, Brandon, let's see some optimism, man.
Okay. So here's the optimism. They just announced two amazing signings today. We're recording on Thursday. Jean-Michel Seri, or Michael, depending on where you're from. He's a really exciting 26-year-old.
Yeah, Michael Serra,
they signed star of Arrested Development, Michael Serra, the noted Ivory Coast resident, Michael Serra. So Siri, he's a great midfielder from Nice, probably not going to be an FPL dynamo. He's more of a holding midfielder. He just scored 2 goals last season. But if you go all the way back to 2016, 2017, he put 7 goals in for Nice. So he's a class player. He will elevate the midfield. A lot of the talk is, what is Siri going to do for this team writ large as opposed to an individual FPL player? So we're just looking at him for what he can do, I think, for a player like Tom Kearney. So Kearney is the huge bargain. He's the team captain, the talismanic figure on this team. He is priced to buy at $5 million. He could potentially be on Pens. Pens, it's a bit of a mystery for Fulham. They only had 4 or 5 Pens last season in total, and Sky Norwood actually took all of them. But there Kearney is. Maybe he can be pushed a little farther forward because of a player like Siri coming in. And I like him a lot as a fifth midfielder. If you're willing to go from 4.5 to 5, Kearney is looking good there. And Ryan Sessegnon, the other midfielder of note, 6.5. Amazingly talented. You don't need to hear it from me, 18-year-old Englishman. A lot of people were saying, take Sessegnon with England to the World Cup. He's that good. He scored a whopping 16 goals last season in the championship. And an amazing story for him to be converted from a defensive back to this exciting scoring. I would liken his style of play to Leroy Sané on Man City. He plays that sort of attacking winger role for Fulham. Mm-hmm. It's a miracle that Sessegnon is, because he's so beloved, that Fulham looks like they're going to be able to keep him on their payroll this season. We talked about this in one of our previous World Cup pods, talking about, I don't know how it came up. Anyway, it did. And if you compare 6.5 for Sessegnon to 5.0 for Kearney, if you're looking at a newly promoted team like Fulham, where we don't know exactly what we're going to get, what to expect, it's much lower risk for Kearney. And probably better value.
Sessegnon's already, it's 15% ownership already in the league, which in the FPL game, which seems crazy high to me. Given everything you said, I mean, it could work out, but it seems a little, for an 18-year-old, that's a lot of pressure. So I think I'm with you there.
Not much else to see here. They only have 2 defenders listed in the game at the moment.
It is crazy, by the way, like that they have 2 defenders listed. I mean, this has never happened before. I've never gone to an FPL page and seen 12 players listed.
Yeah, we can confirm that they do have a 3rd defender, though. So a part of the Siri transfer news was also his compatriot at Nice, Maxime Lemichard. He's a 28-year-old Frenchman. He plays left back. And so this is interesting. I like to see this chemistry that Djukanovic is bringing into the side. They're losing all these loanees, great, but and young, but kind of mercenary style footballers. So 2 of these players who know each other from Ligue 1, they're going to come and bring a little bit of pedigree and chemistry to the starting 11. So that's exciting. So I'd be interested to see what Machard is priced at. He's not a goal scoring threat, more of assist potential coming from him down the wing. So I'm not anticipating him having a huge price tag, probably coming in at 4.5.
Okay.
And then we just wait to see what happens with Mitrovic. He'll likely get signed from Newcastle because he just fit in so well. He's got that Serbian connection with Djukanovic. And if that does happen, I would predict a 6.0 price tag.
Yeah, and he would be very intriguing at $6 million. I mean, his finishing was not great this summer for Serbia, but like you said, he fits so well with that team. It's huge goals in the second half of the season to help propel Fulham back into the league. So
And he's one of those strikers that he has something to prove. He didn't quite make the mark that people had thought he could his last run in the Premier League. So I think that's exciting.
Final team, Huddersfield. I'm glad this is the final team because I am getting talked out here, Brandon. Their opening fixtures are so horrible. Oh, my God, so horrible. They play Chelsea and Man City to kick things off. a little breather, I suppose. They play Cardiff, Everton, and Crystal Palace the next three, and then it's Leicester, Spurs, Burnley, Liverpool in the four matches to follow. So they better get some wins right in that little game week 3-5 tier. They could really be in some trouble. No players at all in the World Cup, so nothing to worry about there. Incoming players still to be determined. No big news on that front yet. Jonas Lassell, 4.5 million, 10 clean sheets, one assist.
Well done, Jonas.
I shouldn't say not at all, by the way. I forgot that Aaron Moy, of course, played for Australia. Aaron Moy with 5.5 million, four goals and three assists last season. It's just a little too high for me at 5.5. Again, another player he wish was just a half million cheaper. The whole thing about Huddersfield is that they're like a weird, like, very poor man's Man City or something, where there's like so much rotation for such a small squad, like you or for such a small, like a small club. You're like, how is it like that they rotate like eight defenders and like a million midfielders and the forwards rotate? Like, I mean, it's clearly their key to staying up and to getting promoted. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like fresh legs. And I mean, David Wagner is actually the player the manager I would most like to see the U.S. men's team bring in as their next manager. I think he's so good at mixing and matching players. And for those who don't know, David Wagner is actually has caps for the U.S. men's team. He was born in Germany, but he played for the U.S. men's team. So anyway, I mean, I have a lot of respect for this team for staying up. I don't see a lot of FPL assets here. Right. Tom Ince, possible bounce back candidate. He's, you know, created a fair amount of chances, but he had just an awful conversion rate last season. So, you know, Tom Ince is kind of in that try hard category.
Lump him in with Knockhart, yeah.
Exactly. So, but you know, he's certainly affordable at 5 million. So, maybe a player, if you're really looking for kind of a punty, you know, if you're playing five across the middle, or you just have enough money to spend 5 million on your fifth defender or on your fifth midfielder, maybe he's an option to think about mm-hmm. there. But given their fixtures, realistically, he's not. You know, and then the forwards, you know, you've got De Poitra, six goals and two assists. You have Meunier, who had seven goals, which is actually more than I realized he had, and two assists at 6 million. But I just see better options there. So
don't forget about Quainar, everyone's favorite enabler.
Yeah. So the players are priced to buy for sure. And Lossell is possibly a rotation option, especially if you're playing an early wild card. You could, you know, you certainly could start him in game weeks 3 and 5, home to Cardiff and Crystal Palace. But other than that, I just, you know, Zonka. Actually, you know, forgive me. I really messed up my World Cup thing with them because they have multiple players who win the World Cup, including Zonka, who scored a goal, for goodness sakes. But I just don't see a lot of value here, and I would not be spending my time acquiring Huddersfield assets. I think I'd rather have players in the promoted squads, you know, particularly Cardiff and Fulham. Yeah.
I do think Christopher Schindler was an unsung hero last season for some people, with 9 clean sheets and 2 assists. He's still at 4.5, but I do tend to agree. There's real no reason to get on the Huddersfield bandwagon right now. But special shout out to De Poitra. He is the hair plug king of the Premier League right now. Just the way he gets the fake hair to just stand straight up, it's really remarkable. I think it's terrific.
It is remarkable. All right, Brendan, we have gone so long. We have questions here that we're just going to have to hold off until next week's podcast. We're actually recording a podcast, and we're recording part two in just a couple of days. So James Querelt, brand new Patreon supporter. Sorry, we're not getting to your question. Well, actually, the teams you want us to talk about, we're going to talk about next week's podcast anyway. Same thing for Jamal Rice, FPL Ant, FPL King, FPL Tornado, Ian Walker, and M Bison. All your questions were on our list of questions to discuss, but when you do 2 hours of team previews, something's got to go. So we will answer those questions, though. Thank you for asking them.
Yeah, and M Bison in particular asked us to reveal our game week one bus teams, and I think it's a nice reprieve that I get another few days to tinker with my game week one team before I present it to our audience. So yeah, fair play.
Yep, exactly. Agreed. So thank you for listening. Once again, we'll be back. We're recording Monday night, so we'll be back Tuesday morning with part two of our team previews. You know, once the season actually begins, we'll be back on that regular, Sunday night, Monday night recording, you know, podcast Monday or Tuesday morning, depending on whether there's a Monday fixture. But, you know, for now, early season, you know, there's some vacations and stuff. Everything is a little in flux. So we'll be back in a normal schedule in, 3 or 4 weeks time.
Yeah. Okay. So before we leave, just the housekeeping, don't forget to check out those Patreon supporting tiers that Josh talked about earlier in the pod. Go to patreon.com/alwayscheating for more info. We appreciate all your help. Of course, none of this is possible without our producers, Mike DiPietro, Mr. Peaches himself, and also the official brewmaster of Always Cheating, Stephen Toomey. Stephen, he's a good follow on Twitter. He has these amazing 30-second beer reviews that he does. I encourage you to check him out. Also, a solid Watford fan. While you're here listening to our pod, just go to the iTunes Apple Podcast Store real quick. Give us 5 stars if you enjoy what you hear. Leave us a review if you can. That helps us a lot in getting the podcast out there. You can also subscribe to Always Cheating on SoundCloud. Go to soundcloud.com/alwayscheating. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Hail Cheaters. We're at facebook.com/alwayscheating. And if you've spaced out there, just go to alwayscheating.com. We have links there, of course, to the Always Cheating Super League, which is free to join for all of our listeners, anyone who's a fan. We already have about 1,500 players in that mini league right now. So there's an auto join link at alwayscheating.com to get into our mini league. And Josh, if people have elaborate questions, can they just email us?
Yep, they can email us, hailcheaters@gmail.com. Just one thing to add, if you're interested in joining our Patreon Draft League, I would suggest joining that Patreon tier by at least the end of this month, maybe into early August. But we want to do that draft at least, a week before the season starts. So just a heads up there. But other than that, yeah, we'll be back in a few days with part 2 of the podcast. And thanks for listening.
Poku forever.
DiPietro and Toomey forever.
Hail DiPietro and Toomey forever.
All right. Good night. Good night and good luck.